For the Gage County Board of Supervisors, Open Meeting Act is posted on the southeast corner of the wall. Attendance by observation.
I haven't got back to T.O. Hall.
Anderson, Gronewald, Bauman, Adams, Fleece, Byers, and Barnard. The first thing on the agenda is a consent agenda, which can consist of the general agenda, approved minutes of meeting held May 19th, approve all claims through June 2nd in the amount of $576,779.10, approve and place on file correspondence received, approve reappointing John Menzel to Veteran Service Committee for term 2009 to 2014, approve ADA 504 policy for Gage County, approve obtaining quotes for materials for sound system and county courtroom projects number one and for district courtroom project number two, and that's the consent agenda.
I move we approve consent agenda 1 through 7.
Second that.
Moved by Fleece, seconded by Bauman. Discussion.
Mr. Chairman.
Gary.
One question on the quotes for the sound system for the county courtroom and stuff. We're going to base the bids off the recommendations of Tom Russell. Is that safe to say? Okay. That's all.
Matt?
Just note that inheritance fund, we're going to pay some of road and bridge operation out of that.
So that's where the additional funding will come from, and that's about $68,000 that'll come out of inheritance to pay those.
The cover rock and gravel, is that? I mean, that's one of the large line item overruns, I'm trying to say, I guess.
Yeah. They're related to improving the roads after this last winter. Gravel, rock, and tires, so operational expenses.
Just had a quick question on the ADA 504 policy. The county attorney reviewed that and everything, so I've been a little bit out of the loop on that.
That's not on the consent agenda.
Yeah, it is.
It's on the consent agenda.
Yeah, item 6.
Oh, okay, sorry.
I just wanted to make sure, because the highway department, I think, has triggered that process, right?
Yeah, it's a requirement for the whole county, being the federal aid affects the highway department and all the grants the sheriff's office. Anytime you get federal money, you got to have all these policies
right
in effect. And, Rick's looked at it several times. We're all confused, so we're just trying to pass what they recommend.
Is this in use by some other? You picked it up from another county, I would assume.
This one is from the state website.
The state website, and we're adopting basically what they're recommending.
Right.
Just all I needed. Thank you.
Okay. Matt, did you have something else? Any more discussion? Vote. 7-0 in favor. Regular agenda. Comments from the public and requests for future agenda items. Any comments? Lori, do you have a comment? You want to do it now, Dave?
Hi. Good morning. Dave Jones, custodian. It has been brought to my attention during this work in progress, the electronic ballast lights that we have. It's a good clean light, however, it's a very uneven light also. We found this out on first floor where the ceilings are higher. It's just not producing an even light throughout. We do have the electrical engineer coming down again. He came down last week but didn't give us a real good solution to this problem. What we're seeing is the desks have light above them, but there are a lot of shadows. I was surprised when they went into treasurer's office how dark a lot of areas are. So, like I say, we have the electrical engineer coming down again today, and hopefully he will give us some solutions on this.
Okay. Thank you. Executive session, Paul Douglas, update on pending litigation. Is Paul here yet? Do we want to do the personnel issue executive session, Matt, until we do it all at the same time, or go do it, get it out of the way?
Do them at the same time.
Same time, okay. Marlin, Highway Superintendent report.
I handed out a report.
We'll start at the top with the zoning. The Planning Commission had their meeting on the 26th and on the temporary asphalt plant borrow pit. The county board hearing will be June 16th at 9:30 a.m. The Planning Commission did recommend approval. With your, you'll be getting a mailing on that with the application and all the documents that there's a letter attached with from constructors that saying they'll will verify the road before they start, and any damage they do they'll fix before they leave. Their lease on the property that they're going to use is for a year, so we feel like it'd be a good idea to put a time limit of a year on that special use also, and that saying that if they need more time, they need to come back to the county for approval. Then on the June Planning Commission, we're going to work on the updates and the wind regulations again. We probably won't have the meeting till the middle of June because of the other conferences going on. I have a highway superintendent's conference the second week. So then we'll go on down to the highway department. And I guess the first thing on there is to receive and approve or disapprove recommendation from the Road and Bridge.
Paul Douglas is here now. If his time is, I mean, I don't forget in charge by the hour
or
not.
Marlon, we're going to interrupt you and need a motion to go into executive session, update on pending litigation and personnel issues.
So moved.
Moved by Bauman. Seconded by Anderson. Discussion. Vote. 7-0. We'll continue. Need a motion to come out of executive session.
So moved.
Again.
Moved by Anderson. Seconded by Bauman. Discussion. Vote. 7-0. Approve or disapprove reprimanding of Mark Mines, Gage County Emergency Manager, for work performance issues.
I'd move Mark Mines, Gage County Emergency Manager, be given a written reprimand prepared by Gage County Supervisor Matt Bauman from the Gage County Board of Supervisors, informing Mr. Mines of the board's expectations and how Mr. Mines' recent conduct has not met the expectations of the county board.
Seconded by Fleece. Discussion. Vote. 7-0. Marlon, you're up, wherever you were at.
We were going on with the receive and approve or disapprove recommendation from Road and Bridge Finance Committee on motor grader bids received 2 weeks ago.
Mr. Chair, I have some recommendation or a recommendation here from the Road and Bridge Committee. I can't speak for the Finance Committee, but from the Road and Bridge Committee, it was unanimous. I have a written summary here of kind of our thoughts and our how we came to the recommendation we're about to give you, and then I'll make it a motion when I get to that point. We would recommend that we do purchase an all-wheel drive vehicle. This would be used for our construction crew mainly, and then they're a much improved type of vehicle for snow removal with the front V plow on it. We do not recommend exercising the extended warranty. We have not seen that being a cost that's needed. Number three, we do recommend the joystick control, and as much as it's become the industry standard, and we feel it will help the resale value of either maintainer if in 10 or 15 years, and typically we've been using or keeping our machines. What, our newest machine's about 14 years old, Marlon?
That's right, 1996.
Okay, so we do keep them quite a while. And it is our belief, based on research, that the CAP machine will have a $10,000 to $20,000 more resale value, 10 to this 14 years down the road. That's, we believe, documented based on our research. According to our own shop records and those of other counties, the CAT engines have historically, and I understand this is the past, not the future, and I realize it's not a six-wheel drive machine, but historically, CAT machines have been more fuel efficient than the Deere. Marlin had as high as a $2,200 a year savings. I just estimated for this document $1,000 to $2,000 a year in fuel savings. Given the bid advantage of the Deere all-wheel drive versus the Cat all-wheel drive, which was $5,126 for the joystick model without the extended warranty, which is the model that we're recommending, it is our recommendation that since there's only a $5,000 difference and the four recommended qualifications, you can add that up yourself. If you keep a machine for 14 years, it runs into the thousands and thousands of dollars. It is our recommendation that the lowest and best bid for the life of the machine is the Cat 140M all-wheel drive at the bid price of $233,690, and would so move.
Moved by Anderson, seconded by Fleece. Discussion.
Mr. Chairman.
Chairman.
Last time we bought one of these, we had the same discussion. I think the Cat salesman remembers it. And I know Matt has talked to about every dirt contractor in Gage County and maybe the surrounding area. Fuel efficiency is based on the work you're doing and many times the operator. And Matt can tell you who all he talked to if he wants, but he talked to a load of very reliable and long-time dirt people. So the fuel efficiency in that, and I saw some information on the Deere, depends what job you're doing and who's running the machine. Just like gas mileage in your car, if you're hot rodding it all the time, you're going to use more gas. That's just how it is. And if I'm wrong, I'd like to ask that we know that the Cat's all joystick, but if we go with the steering wheel, which a lot of motor graders still are, is that a $10,000 savings?
Yes, it is, but you actually need the steering wheel on both models. Even if you get the joysticks, there's still a steering wheel there for the pattern factor if you do.
So for a lesser price John Deere, you get both in the same?
For a lesser price, you get the standard controls and the steering wheel. For the joystick control, you get the steering wheel and you get the joystick control.
Okay. I'd like to ask if it's all right, Mr. Chairman. Fred Wright, do you drive a John Deere or a Cat?
We bought a John Deere.
Do you have joystick or steering wheel?
Steering wheel.
What kind of fuel efficiency and what kind of service? And we know Cat's a good machine, and I think John Deere's as good. And in the budgets we're in, we got to try to save some money. And Fred's not going to tell anybody anything that's not true. If he says that it's as good a machine, they both have shops to work on them, so we know that every motor breaks down. I think we got to look out for the taxpayers a little bit here, and I got to tell you, I'm going to vote for the John Deere because there's a savings, and I think that $10,000 plus the lower bid to begin with makes it closer to $14,000, $15,000. I think we got to save the money. Fred's ran. How many have you had, Fred?
We've had four John Deeres, and they're both good machines. I've ran both machines, they're both made to go work.
And you agree that the front wheel assist or front wheel drive is worth it?
It is well worth it. You got the resale. Then you put that bob drum in the push of snow, it will go through.
Last winter.
Yeah.
We have never put chains on either one of our machines.
I'm not Rex, or for the whole board, I'm not knocking the Cat. We know that's a premier brand, and I too talked to some contractors, and the one in particular said he buys John Deere because they do everything he wants and they cost him a little less. When you keep a machine as many years as we do, I don't know if that end is at this point in time with our local economy, if that's a big issue as we like to think. I know life cycle costs and all that's a good selling point, but the fact is, if you're including everything in that and also fuel consumption, I think we talked about that before, and you got good machinery too. But we talked about this last time. And so I'm going to have to vote for the John Deere to save the money.
Matt, did you? No? Okay. Any more discussion? Dave?
Yeah, just point out that our records over 15 years, you can go back as long as you want, our fuel records with multiple drivers prove at least a half a gallon an hour difference. I mean, that's, if you want to go with data versus instinct or preference, and resale value, it is critical, I think, in any machine. I've farmed a long time and have watched the machinery markets. Just recently got a skid loader. Brand makes a difference. You can get into something for a lower price that makes an advantage. But I would vote for John Deere in a heartbeat if this bid was $25,000 to $30,000 cheaper. But when it's only $5,000 cheaper, I personally can't do it. I don't see the advantage. And
but it can actually be $15,000 cheaper.
Yeah, even if you went with a steering wheel addition or the dual controls, whatever it is that makes it. I don't know how you get dual controls to make it cheaper, but.
Any more discussion?
Well, just the cost issue, that's what I'm looking at, going with the steering wheel. Because you're right, and the folks I visited with, 50% said, boy, we really like the John Deere. 50% said, boy, if you can afford a Cat for $3,000 or $5,000 difference. But when you look at the steering wheel, which is an additional $10,000 less, we just had a recent factory locally. You know, timing's everything. How do we justify spending an additional $15,000 when we can get a brand new piece of equipment? I would agree if you can do it for $3,000 or $4,000, you're probably better off going the Cat. And that seemed to be the consensus from the folks I talked to. But we're talking, my perspective is $15,000.
Can I say something? You guys are talking about a steering wheel in one machine, a steering wheel in the other machine. That's not the case. The G has the lever controls, which are the hydraulic valves. The GP and the M series are electrical over hydraulic.
Chad, pull the mic up.
That is a huge, huge difference between the lever machines and the electric over hydraulics. You're not apples to apples on the G because it has a steering wheel. That's not the case at all. So, I mean, the technology is here. It's here to stay. Down the road in 15 years, when you guys go to trade it in, that technology is going to be of huge value. Whether you go the GP or you go the M, the technology is here. It's here to stay. If you buy the other machine, you're going to be behind the times. It's just a fact. It's like computers and typewriters, guys. That's what it comes down to. I mean, so.
Okay. Any, Gary?
One last comment. Given the top contractors and the reports that I got and that I know Matt got, and I believe what Fred Wright tells me, I'm still going to stay where I'm at. He may want to.
Greg, you have a comment?
You're talking about the G versus the GP. Yes, it is electronic controls. Most of your operators are used to a standard control machine. If you get into a joystick machine, there's still going to be training involved. So with the standard controls, it's what you guys are used to. You can take any operator, stick him in that machine, and he can run it, which is probably not the case with the GP controls or even the joystick controls. You do save some money, and again, with either machine, you still get a steering wheel. It's just if you get the GP, you get the electronic valves. You do have a lever steering, but there is still a steering wheel as far as a panic factor. It's just kind of like driving a car. If you're driving off of a cliff and there's a steering wheel there, you remember to turn the steering wheel. But if you've got a stick, you got to think about what you're doing. It's kind of the sense of what's going on. But that's all I'd like to say about the G and the GP, the differences.
Could we hear the motion again? It was to approve the Cat, right?
The Cat for $233, correct, Dave?
Yep, six-wheel drive or all-wheel drive and without... which automatically has joystick controls and without the extended warranty. That's the.
Okay.
And I'd say I just bought a 90 horse skid loader. It never had a steering wheel. It doesn't have a steering wheel. It's never going to have a steering wheel. And that's just what people, that's how you drive them.
I know Hanover Township has a Cat. And we don't have a steering wheel on ours. And my brother runs it. Dwayne Party should have stayed because he's run it, and he likes it. My husband's says he's going to learn to run it yet, and they've never had any problems with it. They like it. They're very happy with the Cat machine. They'll never have anything else. So.
Any more discussion?
You guys do have two Cat M's in your fleet right now, and have had very good luck with them.
What about the extended warranty? Did I understand that the John Deere thought we should get the extended warranty?
That was Greg's recommendation.
I would say with the two machines that you have now, as far as the Cats, you got no warranty on them. So if you have a transmission failure, it could cost you $20,000-$30,000.
But they didn't think we needed one. But you thought we should get one for the John Deere, right?
I'm going to say that because if something happens,
is covered.
I can't guarantee that we're going to cover it. And I'm going to guess that Caterpillar can't guarantee that they're going to cover transmission 2 or 3 years down the road either.
I don't know. I know with our township patrol, I do know that the CAT has always covered ours, and I don't think we have a warranty on ours. Like, that's all I've got. I mean,
CAT's technology. You make a drastic change like that with new technology. I just think it's wise to have a backup.
Any more discussion? Vote. In favor, Anderson, Groenewald, Fleece, Byers. Against, Bauman, Adams, Marnard. You're going to have a new CAT. What else, Marlon?
The second thing I got is approve or disapprove resolution vacating a road located South Third Drive from south right-of-way line of East Sage Road southerly to the north right-of-way line of East Sage Drive. And I don't have a copy of that. I assume you got one.
What was that?
On that resolution for the road vacating.
Yes.
What number is that?
18.
10-18. Okay. Need a motion to approve or disapprove resolution 10-18.
So moved.
Moved by Fleece.
Second.
Seconded by Bauman. Discussion. Vote. I need to change mine. 7-0 in favor.
Next thing is approve or disapprove a resolution adopting the floodplain maps dated June 18, 2010. Pretty short resolution. I sent it to Rick and he changed it a little and sent it back. Usually they add more stuff. But you can see it in your packet behind the motor grader comparables and stuff.
And that would be 10-19.
I move we approve resolution number 10-19, designated current flood insurance rate maps.
Second.
Moved by Fleece, seconded by Bauman. Discussion. Vote. 7-0. Do you have a comment, Marlon?
Yeah, I did. They restudied the floodplain areas, and the maps have been out, have been available for 6 months. They have a 6-month period for comments. We looked over them several times. We had some changes that made sense, and that's why we're adopting the new maps now.
Okay.
That's all I had on that.
Accept, reject, or award quote for use 206 or newer four-axle semi-tractor with approximately 50,000 miles on unit. And we closed the quotes last meeting, correct?
I make a motion to reject the quotes for a 2006 or newer four-axle semi-tractor with approximately 50,000 miles on the unit.
Second.
Shouldn't we open up and see what it says?
Moved by Bauman, seconded by Barnard. Now discussion. So...
To reject unseen, is that the plan?
Well, give him a chance to. Obviously, he's got something.
I'm just saying that.
What's that?
There's one bid.
One quote.
Only one.
I mean, that's what it was last meeting, and we didn't have it on the agenda, so. And that was the cutoff time was whatever 9:30 that morning.
My rationale is a budget issue. We're spending out of inheritance now. Initially, there was talk about spending half this budget, half next budget. You know, we can come back and look and see where we're at. It's a cost issue. We're just spending a lot. I figured if we can maybe put a little money into the vehicle that we have now, redo the rear end. I know there's some suspension issues there. We may just have to drive older stuff for another 6 or 8 months.
Dave, do you have a comment?
Not yet. I'll wait to see what it is.
The bid quote price on that is $88,500.
$88,500, Marlon?
$88,500. The only thing I know it's close enough to the end of the year, we can pay for it next year. All out of next year's, but Our one we got is 24 years old. It has almost 800,000 miles on it. We bought it with 600-some on it. If you keep it, this one has 46-something on it. If you keep it 24 years like we did the last one, that's $3,687.50 a year for the cost of the truck. You know, to fix the rear ends and the springs and the brakes, it's going to eat up 3 years of that right there. You know, so it's just one way to update our equipment without buying new. You know, a new one will run 125, somewhere around there. So,
Mr. Chair?
Dave.
I guess we got a motion and a second, right? To reject.
Correct. Correct.
I would just comment, sometimes, you know, you cut off your nose to save your face kind of thing, and we're driving 24-year-old equipment here, hauling tens of tons of equipment on the back end of it. In visiting with the public over the last vast number of years, Gage County has never been accused of driving too new, extravagant, or fancy equipment. The comment I always hear is how frugal we've been versus either the city or the state. So I think buying good, used equipment at lowered price makes sense, and it has to be done sometime. As far as our budget, I know the budget's tight. Matt's finance chair, so he has to, you know, sleep at night with the figures in his head, and I really appreciate, you know, where he's coming from. And maybe if it can wait, quote, till next year, this year, next year, I don't know what that difference really makes. The one point I've noted about the budget is that this year we had a horrible winter, and all winter we were promising our constituents that, yes, we'll get you the rock, we'll hire extra contractors to remove your snow, and we told Marlin, don't worry about it, just get the job done, keep the roads up in as best shape as you can, and we still get criticism on our roads even when we bust our hind ends to do as good a maintenance as we can. And we were told, at least my understanding along the road, was this was going to be taken care of, whether it was $200,000-$300,000, which was at least the numbers that I was familiar with, would be transferred out of inheritance, same place that were you spending all the money on the courthouse from, that same pool of money. And it's a nice fund, building nice by meaning it has built up to a significant amount. And then crunch time comes, we're told, no, we're not going to transfer $300,000. We're going to make you spend your budget down to zero, and we'll pay a few bills out of inheritance, and by July 1, we'll be down to like zero or negative in the highway department without ever transferring this block amount. So I understand it's just a change of philosophy. It's not good versus bad or evil or anything else like some people try to make it. It's just, that's how I think at least many of us understood that was supposed to happen. Now we're just transferring what we just barely what we need to get by. So I would think if you would look at it differently, you would see that this kind of an expenditure could come out of road and bridge, particularly if you did it a year out of the current budget and a year out of next year's budget, to do it all out of next year's. But I do believe for safety, prudent management, for all kinds of reasons, we need to upgrade that transport tractor.
Mr. Chairman.
Gary.
I've owned over-the-road trucks. I've owned my share of those. And this doesn't go over the road. This goes from one end of the county to the other sometimes, and it sits a lot. I understand what Marlin wants to do. But Matt's also got a job to do when it comes to trying to make this budget work. And if we can wait a little bit, there are going to be a whole lot of people in Gage County waiting not to buy stuff, so I think we should be careful what we do. If Marlin, if it could wait a little bit, how do we know a better deal won't come along for a truck? I think we got to be pretty careful here, and I too wouldn't want to be Matt trying to figure this out. And when we set the budgets, you know, sometimes the people that run our departments, you know, if they got any money left, they hurry up and, you know, sometimes spend it down at the end, even if they didn't need it. So if somebody's budget does get spent, and we did have a hard winter and we had to put some money in our roads, and we'll have to put more in if it don't quit raining probably, I still think we got to be budget conscious, and if there's some way Marlin could make this piece of equipment go just a little bit longer, maybe we ought to have to do that. Thank you.
Any more, Marlin?
Another option with the truck updated a little better is you know, we do a lot of shouldering, dirt hauling, and my goal was to eventually either get another belly dump or rent one while we're doing these shouldering projects where you haul a lot of dirt. The end dumps work, but basically you're dumping dirt on the blacktop and laying it off with a motor grader. The belly dumps and the side dumps, you can run that along the side and dump it out, string it out. That was my intention too with this truck, is using it as much as you can. It ain't going to sit like the other one did, because that Ford's kind of a beast, and it is a safety hazard. I've seen it broke down right on 6th Street down here by the stoplight, you know, with cars going around it for a couple hours till we got it so it could even roll to pull it to the shop. So that's all I got to say.
Ron?
I guess my comment's been on also on the Finance Committee. I know that there's a need there, and I have no problems with the need of getting something. We have 28 days left in this fiscal year, and I just would probably like to see us ride out these 28 days and have a much firmer hold on just what we have remaining in our budgets, not only your budget, but everybody's budget, as to just what we are, what our financial situation is on July 1. And at least you're on more solid grounds to say, yeah, we can go ahead with it, whether we pay $44,000 now or $44,000 on July 1. You know, it's still $44,000. So I just would feel more comfortable knowing what our financial situation is on July 1 versus what we anticipate at this point in time.
Okay. Would it be any member's intent then to bring this back up in 30 days?
Oh, I'd have no problem with it at all. At least we'll have an idea.
Maybe we'll find a better, as good a vehicle for less money.
I think he's been looking quite a while. I mean, he's done some pretty serious shopping for this. But I mean, I'm not going to fight with anybody over 30 days, but I really think we're trying to be prudent. I mean, look at our highway shops. Look at a lot of our older pickups and trucks. I mean, it's not quite as ridiculous as it was 30 years ago, but we're not extravagant as a county, and people demand more and more services and getting things done, maintenance, et cetera, in a timely fashion. I'm just thinking it's good management to have at least decent equipment. But if 30 days or people are willing to bring it back up, I would vote to not accept this bid too. I don't have that big problem.
Sure.
Yes, that's the way I feel too. I'm on finance too. I know how hard it is, but I can't help but think when Dave and I weren't here when we voted, or when it was voted to remodel the courthouse, but we've had a vote for the change orders, because once you've got the courthouse tore up like this, what can you do? You can't leave it set. So we've voted for the change orders, and that's cost us a lot of money. And now I hate to see our road and bridge. I don't like to see our department go downhill, and I think our motor graders and our trucks and that are in need of being upgraded. But I can wait 30 days too if everybody else can. But I do think we should bring it back up then, because I'd have voted for getting that truck repaired. I know right now the shoulders on Cyan Road and that, where we need to have that shouldered, and we could use the side dump there to get the shouldering and that done. But I'm willing to wait for 30 days if everybody else is. But otherwise, I'd like to see the highway department get upgraded.
Any more discussion? Matt?
I guess I could amend my motion just to take no action. Or withdraw my motion. Well, I got a second.
You'd have to have somebody else make that amendment. You withdraw. You can withdraw it if you want.
Leave it as it is?
Okay. I would move that we take no action.
That's an amendment.
Oh, I have a second, and I can't do that, can I?
Yeah, you can't.
Somebody else has to.
We're probably better off.
I
don't know where it's at.
Okay.
All right.
Any more discussion?
I'd say just reject it, start over. That's our agreement.
Vote. 7-0 to reject the bids. What else, Marlon?
Since we were talking about rock and gravel down on your report under the all-wheel drive compacts I made, there's a number of tickets we have hanging on the bulletin board. County rock, 9 tickets, a lot of them with whole miles. Gravel, 17 tickets, numerous miles. Township rock, 21 tickets. A lot of spots on there. So, I mean, it ain't over yet. So,
convert tickets into dollars for us. Well, I don't think tickets mean a whole lot to any of us.
Well, a mile of gravel is $3,000. Mile of rock is, I had that spreadsheet. It's not in my bag, but anywhere from $3,700 to $4,700. So, you know, we're talking a lot of money just in that, just in request for that isn't the high or the township allocation yet either. So.
And just to inject quickly, about half of the highway budget, correct me if I'm wrong, Marlon, comes from tax, gas, allocation,
whatever. Highway allocation. Out of our budget, there's about 1.5, 6, or 7 comes in from highway allocation. So our total budget, I think, transferred from the general fund was $2 million. So that's the tax asking dollars right there. The $2 million, that's not, I don't know, Matt, you said the other day 35% of the $10 million, but that's our total budget. Plus, we got other things like the FEMA things. And
really round figures, when I was directly involved in the finance process, about $3 million was the road and bridge budget. About half of that came from gas tax allocation, and the other half would come from property tax and other sources.
Chairman.
Matt.
Just to clarify that, you know, there is an intent to continue to pay for operations for road and bridge, but those will be coming out of inheritance. We're trying to use the actual expenditures out of that budget to pay for payroll. And I think working with Dawn, we've got just enough to do that, because if we expend that down, we're going to be spending out of inheritance. So that's where these have been. That's why I tried to point out through the claims is that's where they're coming from. And I guess that's what I always tell Marlon, play the old poor widow if you can, when you're looking, when people are making requests and try to be frugal. But there's a need out there. I mean, go drive around and you'll see it. Just we need to be aware that those are where those dollars are coming from.
You can't make a mistake of dumping a load of rock in the wrong place, because every place needs it.
So it reduces the mistakes. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Okay. Doesn't matter where you dump it. It all needs it.
What else, Marlon?
Down to the federal projects on the Barnston South, we negotiated. We're finishing the paperwork. I think everybody's kind of in agreement. The state still thinks it's too high, and the engineer still thinks it's too low, but we kind of come to an agreement. We're getting it all on paper so we can sign it. That agreement should be coming to the board in the next, I don't know if it'll be ready in 2 weeks, but it'll definitely be by the first, well, the end of June. So. The crews, that's another thing I was going to bring up. We had another guy go, well, we got three people out for health reasons. Now another guy yesterday came in and said he had a hernia, so he's out. So we got two motor grader guys out and a foreman out, and they're going to be gone, the two of them I know, for at least 2 months. The one with the other health issue, I guess I don't know how much I can talk about, but he don't know yet how long he'll be gone. So I talked to some of the other motor grader guys, and we're going to start switching around to where they'll run down and operate some of the other miles in the two districts to the south. So we're about done crack sealing. We'll start doing some hot mix. I can't talk anymore. Hot mix overlays and patching. We got some holes coming up in a blacktop. Blacktops. We got a lot of. We had a lot of wear and tear on them this winter because of the moisture and the bad winter. So. That's about all I had.
Okay.
Matt.
Marlon, what's the plan with the personnel being down?
Well, I'd like to hire a couple of part-time or temporary guys to get some of these guys back, because we're just running out of
people
to put in equipment.
Where are you going to find?
I don't know. We're spread out.
How if you hire the older guys, can they run your joystick?
Bob Thompson's 84 years old. He's running it.
Ask him how his wrists are at the end of the day.
I would think maybe you'd have a few people out of Husqvarna might be able to run some of that equipment.
I need to check with the board, but I'd like to hire a couple of temporary guys, over the summer.
That brings up, Marlon and I had this discussion yesterday on seasonal workers. Is it time that maybe we shift some of our focus of our maintainers on X amount of hours and get guys rolling on different per se? Because just because we're not here don't mean somebody can't be on maintaining. Fred's maintaining. I went riding around Monday and I saw three different townships out working. I mean, maybe we need to start getting more creative on what we do with our people versus the equipment we have. And it's a work in progress. So, I mean, when you brainstorm, some stupid ideas will come up, but hopefully we can cherry pick out of them and find something that'll work. Gary.
Rex, Matt and I have had this discussion too. When we're on in the summer, we're on 4 10-hour days, so that machine's every patrol's sitting 3 days and not doing anything. Maybe we need to look at changing how some of that's done. Maybe Martin could help us figure out the way to do that. But Matt had a very good idea. We don't know if it'll work, but boy, we need to be looking at some of these things. We got to. Maybe the idea is to change the way we operate. Things have worked pretty good for a long time, but sometimes you have to change, and maybe this would be an opportunity to get more hours out of those machines instead of having them sit part of the time.
Anything else? Thank you, Marlon.
I'd like to thank the board.
Point of order. We have a comfort break.
Oh, okay, that we can. 10-minute recess for a point of privilege for Mr. Anderson. Okay, we're going to reconvene Gage County Board of Supervisors at 10:06.
If you're taking a
attendance
course.
For observation, Anderson, Gronewald, Bauman, Adams, Fleece, Byers, and Barnard. Approve or disapprove recommendation for special designated liquor license for grandstand and beer garden for the Gage County Fair, July 21st through the 25th.
Move to approve.
Move to approve by Barnard. Seconded by Bauman. Discussion. Vote. In favor, Anderson, Bauman, Adams, Fleece, Barnard. Against, Gronewald. Abstaining is Byers. Approve or disapprove recommendation for special designated liquor license for fairgrounds event on August 7th.
Move to approve.
Moved by Barnard.
Second.
Seconded by Bauman.
And what's this one? What's that one for? The one was the fair. What's this other one?
Steve, what's the August 7th?
August 7th, we're having a mixed martial arts cage wrestling type of thing at the fairgrounds. Basically, the reason we're coming for the liquor license.
I'm going to have to tune up a bit then.
Anyway, it's going to be down in front of the grandstand. That's why we're planning on setting up bleachers around the caged area, and that's why we have to ask if it's outside of the regular grandstand. That's why we have to get permission for to sell our liquor there. And that's on August 7th with a rain date of August 14th.
Dennis. Does that martial arts contest involve youth also under the drinking age?
Will they be in attendance there as far as attendance?
Will they be participating?
I do not believe so. It's all state sanctioned. Okay. They have to have the state sanction for this martial arts thing.
I don't know of any martial arts thing that doesn't involve youth.
I don't know if this has youth there or not, Mr. Byers. I'm not sure.
You were talking the cage matches you see on TV, correct?
Like the cage stuff on TV, and so I do not think that there'll be anybody left.
I don't think there's minors allowed in that, because
I
work with some guys that do it, and it's...
But it's all the fight.
It's a different breed.
But they can be in attendance watching.
They can be in attendance watching, yes.
But you'll have the people there to control it, like you do at the races?
Like we do at the races.
I'm going to vote against it because I don't like cage fighting.
It's not like Mr. Byers, it's not like the jiu-jitsu things type of things that the kids are participating in. It's more of a martial arts type. So
it's a boxing match.
Boxing match, yeah.
It's a boxing match.
I think I've made it very clear in the past. I'm very, very supportive of the Gage County Historic of the Agricultural Society. I think what you do is absolutely fantastic. But I'm absolutely adamant on the fact that I don't think we need booze to put on events. And I think we should find other ways to finance our events without having to raise it by selling liquor. So I just need to make that statement.
Okay. Dave.
I understand that the state authorized it, doesn't it? Or being it's on the fairgrounds, do we have a blocking?
We just give a recommendation. The state's the final opinion.
They're
anyway.
The final opinion either way, so put the monkey on their back. I intend to vote no just because, mainly because of the cage fighting to me is stupid and inhumane. I've seen it on TV a few times. And you know, if you had two roosters doing it, they'd throw you in jail for rooster or dog fighting, but two people can beat all the crap out of each other and bleed and snot and spit on each other and God knows what else. And seems to be fine. I just think it's sick of our culture to even do it. So with that pontification or whatever you call it, I'll say I'm sorry, but I'm going to have to vote no on this one.
Any more discussion? Vote. In favor, Bauman, Adams, Barnard. Against, Anderson, Gronewald, Fleece, and Byers. Well, it still goes to the state, so we just recommend that we voted against it. So state's the final say on it. Glenn Schwab, update.
There was a third one on there, too.
Two for the two on the first motion,
the first
Grandstand
one.
And Bear Garden.
Grandstand and Bear Garden.
Yeah, those went through, Steve.
Thank you.
I'm Glenn Schwab. I work with Section 125 program here, which has to do with pre-taxing any type of deductions that come out of your employees' paychecks that are used for health insurance. And I'm just here to give a report. I'm with a company named American Family Life Assurance Company, abbreviated AFLAC, and I come here every year and give a report on what your employees have put into this Section 125 program and how you folks have benefited it as a county. The total flexible dollars that were put in to this program, which is used for unreimbursed medical and dependent daycare, was $33,780 this past 12 months. That includes this month also. And these dollars you do not have to match FICA on, which is a 7.65 savings for you as a county. So you save $2,619 on these dollars. On major medical, that includes the amount of premium that your employees pay for their portion of their health insurance coverage, whether it's individual, family, or whatever. And that is approximately $87,946 that's paid for health insurance premiums. And again, you have a 7.65 savings on that, which amounts to $6,728 savings in FICA. And total insurance premiums that are paid by the employees and run through the 125 pre-tax program, which includes like supplemental type insurance, could be accident insurance, cancer insurance, that type of insurance, intensive care. That amounts to $23,556, which is paid 100% by the employees. In fact, all these figures are paid 100% by the employees. It does not cost the county anything. And that amounts to $23,556, a savings of roughly $1,800. So a total savings just in FICA alone, what your employees have put into these programs, is $11,149. This program has a cost to the county of $800 for the year. You folks pay that, so you end up with savings $10,349. It figures out to $2.50 a month per employee that uses this program. So, and you folks pay that for them, which they appreciate a lot. In fact, the more, if you didn't pay it, you probably wouldn't have the participation that you have in it. The savings is approximately 16% more this year than it was last year, and the participation dollar-wise is approximately 20% more than it was last year. So it seems like it increases every year the more people get involved with it. So, and it's also a savings to them as an employee. When they put money into these unreimbursed medical programs, they don't have to pay state, federal, or Social Security on them dollars themselves. So they save approximately 25.5%. So that's my report. If you have any questions.
Your program runs from what?
The plan year runs July 1st through June 31st of every year.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll be in, I think, 15th or 16th to do this year's enrollment. So, and you board members need to participate in it too. And forms has to be offered to every employee on an equal basis. This is an IRS program. Aflac just administers it. Has to be offered to everybody on an equal basis, but everybody does not have to participate. But we just request that you either sign a waiver that you had it offered to you or participate one way or the other. Thank you very much. No other questions?
Can you have a carryover?
No.
On expenses?
No.
So
no,
if you had something you paid for right now, you couldn't hold that and have it next year?
No. If you spend it now, it has to be deducted now.
In this fiscal year.
Right. Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Brent Meyer, Weed Report.
Good morning. I've got some handouts here for you. And I am Brent Meyer with Noxious Weed Program with the state of Nebraska.
Thank you.
And I'm new to this territory. I'm not new to this job, but I picked up Gage County this year, so if I look different to you than the other guys, that's why.
What counties do you have?
Thank you.
I have got all the way from Dawson County at Gothenburg, Lexington, to Omaha, down to the state line, so I've got 37 counties in there. So if you don't get to see me a lot, you probably aren't too upset about that.
I had 20 counties before, and now I'm up to 37, so we're being efficient, the state is. This is a survey results, and part of my job is to report to you, the Weed Control Authority of Gage County, every year on how your program scored in our point system. We still inspect 1% of the state, 1% of your 1% of the state, which is 9 sections in Gage County. On those survey results from last year, there was no infestations found that were greater than light or trace infestations. If they're a moderate or severe infestation, then you lose points on those systems. So on the top line there, you got 500 out of the possible 500. So that's, you know, next year that may not be the case. It just depends on what sections the computer spits out on that. On county follow-ups, you did lose a few points on there. Anytime we come into the county, do a follow-up on a file that we have, you lose points. Once you close that file, unfortunately, you don't get all your points back. So that's just the way that works. It's kind of a one-way system. If you have any questions on this as we go through, just holler at me. On the office evaluation, Emily does a great job on that. Her paperwork's in line. Everything that the Noxious Weed Control Act requires, she's doing. And she got the 1,000 points on that. And that's everything from just her inspection reports to getting the general notices in the newspaper on time and printed correctly and everything that the Noxious Weed Act requires. Do you guys all have a copy of the Noxious Weed Control Act? Would you like some of those, or you have that, or I can leave them? Emily can get them for you if you wouldn't like them or don't have them. Neither one. Well, it's your duty to uphold this. So
at least I know what a must is.
Yep, and you're going to see a lot of them in the next couple of weeks. I promise you that. I've been out looking. So on the 5 annual reports that you send in, and those you get every fall, and they're sent into our office by the end of January, on the board roster, there is one thing missing on that, so you got 95 out of the 100. The budget, activity, and infestation reports are all just like they should be, and the control plan was missing something, and I'm not sure exactly what that was. Like I said, I've got 37 counties, so I'm not sure what I dinged her on that one, but I did take 5 points off for something. So 975 out of the 1,000, which is excellent on that too. The continuing education, Emily did make it to the required amount of training programs that the Weed Association offers. And those are, I don't know how many of you are aware, if she makes you aware, but they actually take roll call in the morning and after lunch to make sure they're there, and they test at the end of each day. So it isn't just like you show up and you get your hours. You've got to learn what they're offering at those. And always good programs there. I hate to see anybody ever miss any of those because they don't duplicate. So so total 3,350 out of the 3,400. That was above the average in my 37 counties, so that's something. As far as the paperwork into things are working well. I know Gage County is a good participant in the Five Rivers program, weed management area. I'm excited about that coming. It's coming to Gage County, coming out to Beatrice on the 30th. You know, I'd like to see everybody there. Going to be good topics. You know, noxious weeds is something that's not going to go away. I know the senators dealt with that on the river systems. You know, you guys have heard about Phragmites more than you probably ever thought you would have 2 years ago. Probably didn't know how to pronounce it. Most of us didn't. It's in Gage County. I was on properties yesterday where it was sprayed last year, and it's coming back. It's not just a river system weed. It's in upland sites, on faces of the dams. And this thing makes must this seem like the flower child. You know, I mean, this thing is aggressive. It will take over wetlands. It'll take over any low area in your creeks. And if you're not aggressive on it, which I think Gage County has been, they got a lot of them sprayed last year through that Five Rivers weed management area program. So I think that's you know, we're all good at being reactive to problems, and we're trying to be more proactive on some of these new invaders that are coming in. Phragmites isn't new. If you've driven along the Platte River system, you've seen what that thing will do to the Platte River. It's actually almost choked off the channel in some places, created a lot of flooding out by the North Platte area. So that's just one of them. Cerisa lespides, I know you've got on your noxious weed list countywide. Probably will be our next state noxious weed. You know, there's talk about it right now, going statewide with that weed. We're a mobile society. You know, things transport around from county to county, state to state, from country to country. These noxious weeds didn't start in the United States, but they're here. And do you have any questions on any of those? Or I think you understand that the 10-day notice and the 15-day notice on how those work to control the people that aren't cooperating with you. But I'll give you a little heads up on one that you're going to hear about, and it's not a racial thing of any sort, but it's called Bohemian knotweed. And it's listed as one of the 10 most aggressive weeds in the world, and it's sitting in the county right north of you. So that's part of what your weed superintendent does, is keep you and keep looking for these new weeds.
Saline County versus Lancaster.
What's that?
With that name, it must be Saline County versus
no,
Lancaster.
No, and let me tell you, Bohemian knotweed is a cross between Japanese knotweed and giant knotweed. So you take two bad knotweeds that have intermingled, if you will, and have created this thing until this year we knew of one infestation on 66th and Pacific in Omaha. Once we've learned to identify it, I think they found almost 14 infestations in the city of Omaha now, small infestations that hopefully we can still control. Sarpy County has got about 6 infestations, and Lancaster County has 2.
What do you use?
Well, there's different chemicals that we can use. Roundup can be used. The same product that Emily's been using on your Phragmites, the Habitat products or the Arsenals, can be used on that. But this thing, and I won't take a lot more time, but I saw it when it was about 8 inches tall this spring. We started learning to identify it then. I went back 16 days later, and it was this tall in 16 days. Last time I was there, it was this tall. That root system will actually push in basement walls of people planting around their houses. It's a pretty plant. In two instances in Lancaster County, it was planted as an ornamental. So that's why I say we're world travelers. We go to a different country, think this is neat. Hey, let's bring this back. It's a bad, bad deal. So that's part of what your weed department's out there doing for you. You know, they're trying to find these new invaders. We can squash them before they become, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars. You know, the senator could tell you the legislature put out $4 million in the previous 2 years to control Phragmites on the river systems. You know, that's just a ton of money. And if we can catch these before they're that big a problem, That's what we're all here for. We're kind of the low department that people like to kind of forget about, but we're pretty important.
Question. Has there been some removal of Russian olive trees in rivers beds too?
Yeah.
So is that your department, or being yep. the tree, is that something different? Or?
Nope. That works with us.
When do we jump to red cedars? Our problem is red cedars. Yeah,
and it is.
And
but
it's a horrible problem except for the deer hunters. I understand yeah. Rex kind of likes them, but...
You know, I guess if you would like to try to put that on your countywide list, you know, we probably are not going to approve it because it's a native to the United States. And that's the bottom line, unfortunately. You know, there's weeds that are bad. There's two Phragmites. There's a native Phragmites and an invasive Phragmites. Eastern red cedars and a lot of noxious weeds are management program or problems, but I see eastern red cedar as something that somebody fell behind in the game on. They should have chopped them when they were this tall. And now they're huge, and the deer are spreading them all over.
That's the same way with thistles, though. I mean.
Yeah, and it's a management problem. I like a fellow from Dow AgroScience has moved out here from Colorado, and everybody's having a problem with eastern red cedar. What do I spray this with? What can we do with it? He says, well, you guys planted them in every windbreak. Did you expect them to stay?
Yeah. Well, for a lot of years they did.
And they did.
I mean, for probably 50 years they
did. If you would have just cut all the females out of there.
Fire control, too. Fire is the only real suppression.
More horses that nipped them off in pasture. But,
but you're right. It has taken up a lot of acres in the rangeland. Unfortunately, you know, to me, I would manage it because if I wanted to sell that property, it's going to be worth nothing to somebody who wants to pasture for cattle because it's going to be full of eastern red cedar, you know. And that's the same with noxious weeds. You know, you can lose valuation in property so fast with getting Cerisa lespidiza or a leafy spurge established on a property. If the neighbors know that, they're not going to buy it. You know, the property
values.
Seeing
if the county, and especially if the state, would take a position on it, declaring it a problem, and then like everything else, given some assistance in clearing, you know, some incentive or maybe a disincentive for letting them grow.
I guess I don't know the answer to that. I think through
I haven't found one yet. We bring it up by every year.
Yeah, and maybe through the your FSAs or something. Maybe there's some program. There is programs on understory clearing, and that would require. You know, I know we're doing things right now on a federal program on the Republican River that helps cost share on understory within 100 foot of the channel. You know, just so there's programs. I don't know if it includes rangeland for eastern red cedar.
I think FSA has some rangeland improvement
yeah.
or pasture improvement that some yeah. of that might fall under, maybe if it's a cost share type.
Well, the FSA and NRCS have done a horrible job even keeping the CRP grounds clear. I mean, they let that get totally out of control for 10 years, too.
But
so now they're making people cut their trees, you know, after the fact, once they're 10 foot tall, it's kind of a little too late.
They waited too long.
And you do have some groups in this area, and Pheasant Forever is going to be a good contact for you. I was at a meeting out here at the college early, is in the wintertime sometime, and there's a lot of topics on fire and controlling cedars. There was probably... Shoot, I bet there was three topics that day on controlling cedar trees. I mean, it was just, it's that big a problem.
And learn a lot from the Flint Hills of Kansas,
yeah.
that's for sure.
Yeah, if you can get a match to it, it's a good thing, but still it works better when they were smaller. So I sympathize with you. I don't have the answer for you. but it's probably not going to become one of our 9 noxious or 10 noxious
well,
ones because it's a native.
Problem don't understand. Your neighbor lets him go in 30 acres of pasture, and he maybe doesn't care because he doesn't even have cattle. He works in town, and they're kind of pretty out there, so he lets him go. So what happens, every rabbit, bird, whatever, carries them. And with no-till farming, our biggest weed is volunteer trees.
Yeah.
Red cedar is probably the toughest. You can't even spray them, get rid
yeah.
of them. You can cut them off, chop them off, but that's a physical thing. You got a lot of acres. Physically removing red cedar is a pain in the wherever. And then the other one is volunteer thorn locust trees is probably the biggest. And hedge trees, those three, cedar, locust, and hedge. And that's no-till farmers' biggest hassle right now. So. Too much information. But.
Well, no, and it's a concern I hear all the time. I don't have an answer for you, and unfortunately, it is a native, so it's, you know, we're going to get in trouble if we start eradicating our native plants. So it's a management issue, and there is hopefully help out there somewhere for you. So any other questions? If you do, you've got my card. I'm available. I'm not always around, but I'll try to get around as much as I can. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yep.
Approve or disapprove changes to the general assistance guidelines. Phil.
right. I gave all the supervisors the information on the changes that we were requesting to have done to the guidelines. Some of them are mandatory or they have to be done according to state statute, and that is the value or the income level has to be updated every 3 years. That hasn't been done for several years. The first one that I have is for the guidelines to change. We had a problem 2 years ago. We had a citizen of Gage County was driving a truck intoxicated without any insurance, ran into the back of another vehicle and required medical treatment. They were taken to Lincoln. Hospitals in Lincoln came back to us because he had no other assets to recoup cost, medical bills of $24,000. Well, through negotiations, we got that bill reduced to, I think it was $1,900, and we ended up paying them. At the time, I talked to the county attorney, and we didn't have any way to deny that because of negligence. So I wanted to add into the guidelines and was told if we do this, then we have a recourse not to pay for somebody's actions. Gage County shall have the right to deny assistance if it is found the reason for the assistance was due to misconduct or negligence by the applicant. And in that case, it would have been the driving under suspension, driving while intoxicated, and not having motor vehicle insurance. That way we could deny if we needed to those situations where somebody does something that I don't feel the taxpayer should have to pay for. So that was the first thing. The second thing on the list is changing the standards based on the OMB poverty level standards based on the 2009 rate. According to state statute, we have to update those every 3 years. So, and going off the OMB or the HHS poverty guidelines is what we're doing in that situation. So we're right in line with everyone else. So there will never be any, shouldn't be any question on those guidelines. The next changes that we're requesting to have done is changes to the burial, and this is probably the bigger issue here. Currently, we offer burial and cremation services through the county. The recommendations are to change it to a flat fee for a cremation of $1,200 and delete all other services. In that is basically deleting burial out of the guidelines, inserting cremation, $1,200, and changing of the application, and basically changing the application just removes burial, leaves cremation in there. The one question that I did have is in the guidelines that we're currently using, or the application that we're currently using, the applicant, which would probably be a family member or a guardian, would state that they will cooperate with the mortuary in securing income and assets of the deceased to be applied to the cost of the cremation. It was brought to my attention that the mortuaries don't want to be a collection association or go and try to do collections, and I assured them that that was my job, that the only thing this says or states is that when they sign this as a family member or the guardian, that they will work with the mortuary to secure any assets if there is any. If there is and it's not brought to the attention and I find them, then that's my job. Is
that if family wants to have a burial, they pay the extra or whatever? Is there
at the time any money that's there, if there's money there for a burial, that has to go towards the cremation. So basically what it would be, I was just approached the other day. There's a young man who's buried in the cemetery in the county section, and the mother asked to be buried next to him. And I said, well, we don't sell plots in the county section. She said, well, if I wish to have my son taken from there and interred in another plot, could I do that? And I said, absolutely. And then she asked if there would be reimbursement to the county for that. And I said, no. I mean, situations change over time. And we wouldn't go back and ask for the $1,200 or whatever the county paid for the burial at that time. So basically that's where it's at. You know, if there's any assets there, they have to go towards the cremation, which is going to be set at $1,200, and go from there. Rich Humendick and Vaughn Wright are here if they've got anything to say, but I would request that we put these in effect if they're decided on August 1st. That way I could make changes to the guidelines and get the applications out to the mortuaries. And I did talk to Paul Fox also, and he couldn't be here. He was busy with the service this morning. So.
Are you all comfortable with this?
Well, we're going to confer with whatever the guidelines are. And the things that I have problems with or questions with, I've already talked to Phil, and he's cleared that up. The only main question that's remained unanswered is what happens if that family member just will not sign the permit that's necessary for the cremation to take place? Well, then they just forfeit this agreement, and they're back to paying whatever they're
going to
have. Gary? Mr. Chairman, I move that we approve the changes to the general assistance guidelines as requested.
Second.
Moved by Barnard, seconded by Bauman.
I have a quick question. Are you saying then that we, as this body, cannot make the cremation mandatory? It still has to get some magical person has to sign off on it?
The state law requires the nearest family member, whoever that is, to sign authorization for the cremation. The county attorney approves having the cremation done for legal purposes, but the family member has to sign
the nearest family member. And to what extent do you have to chase them down?
It can be by fax. Crematories allowed.
But I mean, you as a funeral home are dictated then to search nationwide or worldwide to try to find a relative?
Well, it's not just one relative. The spouse, that's easy.
Right.
But as a child, you need seven children. You have six, you still have to have that seven by law. I mean, if you follow the law, that's strict as part of that law. It does have to be seven. You can't say, well, six will outrule seven. You've got to find, at least make an attempt to locate all next of kin, which a child, any child, even if they're. What our biggest problem is finding that child that's been estranged from their mom and dad for 30 years.
So there are people out there who have no family, period, or very hard to find. That's interesting. Thank you.
I mean, it could be a cousin. Right.
Nearest.
You could go down farther than that, which is tough.
Any more discussion?
Your motion was basically for all pages that's listed here.
Yes.
Yeah.
Request.
Any more discussion? Vote. In favor, Bauman, Adams, Fleece, Byers, Barnard. Against, Anderson and Gronewald. Approve or disapprove?
I changed my vote back. Yep. I didn't realize it was.
What, 7-0?
7-0. Okay.
Sorry.
Approve or disapprove?
Sleeping at the switch.
It's easily done. Approve or disapprove professional service with Tom Russell for courtroom sound system for county courtroom project number 1 in the amount of $1,800 and for district courtroom project number 2 in the amount of $2,400, Ron?
But this would be to have Tom do the professional services we would need in regards to whatever courtroom sound system we would have in those two courtrooms, and the amount is as stated there, and all of you, I think, are familiar with him. He's designed this work here for us, and his fee to do this, I think, is very reasonable for what we're asking him to do. So I would move to approve appraisal service with Tom Russell for the amount stated, for the project stated.
Moved by Fleece, seconded by Anderson. Discussion, Matt?
So the county courtroom, that's essentially new because it's in a new location, and the district is a redo, and we...
Well, there wasn't anything to redo.
There was no system.
None at all. In the district, there was no
little recorder.
They had some loudspeaker or some system with the speakers, but there wasn't any.
Basically, hardly anything that you could even.
Besides that, it bounced off the ceiling. Nobody heard it after they said it most of the time. News media included.
This isn't Friends of the Courthouse. This is ours.
Yeah.
Any more discussion? Vote. 7-0 in favor. Approve or disapprove change order number 10 for slate roof project in the amount of $4,755.15.
I would move to approve change order number 10 in the amount of $4,755.15. This would be for the material to put over the white roof that you see on each of the four corners. It would be replaced with a gray color to it. Yeah, I guess one good thing about it, it does extend the extends a warranty for 10 years. And it, the big part of the cost of that change order is to have the people renting of that people to get them back up on those four corners again. So it's about $1,000 of that for that. So I guess of everything, anything I've had involved with the project, I've had more people talk to me about that white spots up there. I mean, see, the roof looks beautiful, and then all of a sudden they see that white up there. So,
you seconded by Barnard.
Oh, I discussed it before we had a
second. Discussion.
Okay.
One more thing. I would have thought somebody, one of these people we're paying all this money to, would have thought that might have stuck out like a sore thumb.
Well, they had either white or black. Black would have probably stuck out too.
But we ended up with a different color, so. Yeah.
It's the same color that's on the flat one that you don't see, you know.
Any more discussion? Vote. In favor, Anderson, Groenewald, Fleece, and Byers. Against, Bauman, Adams, and Barnard. Approve or disapprove change order number 23 for light fixture to South Public Entrance Lobby in the amount of $232.
This was an additional light fixture to be put in that area there. And William, has got anything you want to add to that? They at one time had the...
Half the original request, didn't it? I think
yes.
We sent them home and said, BS, we ain't doing it, and
we
came back
four,
and said we might
we
go this
had 4 hours of electricity went down to 2 hours. Everything else down.
So it's been edited already.
Okay, need a motion to approve, and we need a second. Seconded by Anderson. Discussion, Wim, if you want to touch on it or if we need it even.
Yeah.
Mary, question?
Only comment again, we have employed a lighting engineer on that, and I'd have thought if they needed a light there, they'd had that figured out. So again, I'll vote no.
Got a reply to that.
Okay. Any more discussion? Vote. Again, in favor, Groenewald, Bauman, Adams, Fleece, Byers. Against, Anderson and Barnard.
Can't let the no birds have all the fun.
Yeah. Approve or disapprove quote from Maricom to move existing phone system to data center and convert to rack mount for the amount of $7,245.
I would move to approve Maricom cost of $7,245. This is not a change order. It's just to move everything from here down below. This is also an upgrade in our system, which talking to the staff, people here at the courthouse, they felt that would probably pay for itself in a short period of time just on what the cost is to have them come down and make changes to the system. So otherwise, it would have been about $4,500, something like that. So,
second, Gary?
Yes.
Second. Discussion. I guess I want to start this off is, Wim, is this billing here going to be back charged to the electrician then? Is this $7,000?
Some of
who is paying the $7,000?
Well, the way this came about was, a lack of communication, misunderstanding between the contractor and one of his subcontractors. The cost of this telephone equipment move was incorporated into our original bid document to be performed by the subcontractor. The equipment is owned, operated, warrantied through Americom, and when contacted about moving that equipment, they indicated that by a subcontractor moving the equipment, that Americom's warranty and contract with the county for that equipment here in the building would no longer be valid. At that point, we had a meeting with all of the entities to determine how and when this communication issue happened and what needed to be done in order to get the telephone equipment moved to the new data center. The cost for moving that equipment would have been in the original document set should had those elements communicated. So the cost for moving it would have been a county.
It would have, should have, but it was in there and somebody didn't pick it up. So my question is repeated, who's paying for this?
I don't know that that's been determined.
It's a work in progress, so.
Mr. Chairman?
Gary?
I'm going to go ahead and move that we disapprove that in the amount of $7,245 in payment to be withheld from the contractors.
We have motions to approve it.
Oh,
if you withhold it, Gary, the project is stopped. And we need that done.
So
or
how,
the county
how are we going to settle? Who?
Hey, we got 10% withholding here.
Yeah, we can settle that.
Okay.
But if you want the attorneys in the office, we need to get this finalized.
There'll be some issues raised.
Okay. Others,
Dave.
My suggestion, and I did miss the building grounds meeting last half of. Last Thursday, I was here for the early meeting and skipped out the last half. So I'm a little bit green on this, but I'm thinking it's like $4,000 to move what we got, $7,000 to upgrade. Is that what we're doing? And
correct.
Is this that rack that Mark Mites has been hollering about to us for months and months?
You're right.
I think it's for.
The $3,000 would be our expense of the upgrade. The $4,000 is somebody else's.
I think, first of all, we need to upgrade because with all the data stuff we got and plugins and stuff, we're about out of ports. At least that's been part of the problem over the years. So I'm thinking the upgrade makes sense. I would suggest we go ahead and do it, but try our dangdest through legal means or haggling or however to get that $4,000 out of one of our contractors because. Because that moving part should have been done.
They never hesitate to take $4,000 out of us.
Somebody else's expense. And, I know that could be amended specifically to the motion to approve it with whatever dollar amount it was bid just to simply move it, that ought to come out of somebody else's hide.
The other urgency we have on this is to get that stuff moved because we can't get everybody back in this courthouse unless those telephones are in operation. And or get the elevator in operation. I mean, it's one of these last minute.
And in a business environment like this, telephone upgrades about every, pick your number of years, 5, 10, 15 years, are kind of a sequential thing, part of doing business anyway. So some part of that, maybe that $3,000 difference is a legitimate expense. But I think we ought to try and get hit somebody for the $4,000 to move it.
I visited with Davey briefly. Basically, the $4,500 bucks is essentially to put it on it, just to move it. And this the upgrade it will right. allow Davey to change a lot of these ports independent of Americom. So we also gain a level of independence here where we don't have to call Americom down to do some things. And if Davey can speak to that briefly.
Right. When I talked to Trevor, he said that would pay for itself within 20 service calls, 20 hours worth. It would give me the availability to, if people move in their offices, instead of calling AmeriCom and having that phone number switched, I would be able to just go down to the new room and just put it into the patch panel. So that $2,500 difference would pay for itself quickly.
Just quick ancient history. AmeriCom got in this building after an extensive process of evaluating alternate phone companies, and it was way, way, way cheaper than LT&T was at that time. And their service, I think, has been pretty good on the service end of things.
They have been good.
But they were low. It wasn't really a bid. It was whatever they submitted, what they would do it for. It wasn't a sealed bid, but saved tons of money, both in operation. Plus, they reviewed our long-distance bills and stuff for us. They're a phone management company and saved us thousands just by cleaning up our phone bills for us and getting different packages at that time. I think things have changed some over the years. But
well, if I'm still around when this project is nearing completion, I can tell
we're going to shoot you first.
That $4,655 will be up there someplace.
Yeah.
Not 10%
cheaper.
Hold back. It's going to be held back. Somebody just drop the ball on one of those subjects.
Okay, any more discussion then?
If I can just have a couple more minutes on this telephone issue, the there is going to be another meeting about this whole telephone issue this afternoon. One of the other elements in the telephone system is the fact that Windstream actually brings your telephone lines into the building. At that point, AmeriCom takes over with their equipment and distributes that around this building. So we have two different entities involved in supplying telephone service to the building. Both of those were left out of this conversation until just recently, and everybody's really scrambling to figure out how to make all of this work. Now, I can only give you an estimate on time because we have not had the meeting with Windstream yet, but we're getting indications from them that they will come relocate the telephone lines at their convenience, which isn't encouraging to me. What I'm going to get at here is the comments that were made about getting the attorneys back into the building on schedule. Because of the fact that I don't have a hard time given to me by AmeriCom and Windstream when this can all be switched over, I had my reservations about whether it was going to affect this move back and the operation of the elevator, and so I asked our cabling installers to give me an evaluation. If the worst case scenario happens and we cannot get our telephone systems relocated in time and the attorney offices activated in time for that move, what options do we have? Can we, with the equipment that we have here in place right now this minute, patch the system so that it activates the attorney offices and service to the elevator? They've gone through that evaluation and have reported back that it will not be easy, but it can be done. And so whether or not Windstream makes their presence sooner or later is a little bit irrelevant now because we have a backup plan in place should that not happen, to rewire through some patching of systems to enable the attorneys to come back in the elevator to be operational. I haven't broken the news to anyone yet, but it is our intention not to accept any compensation requests for making that patchwork happen. I feel it's, again, like all of you are finding out, that it was something that was really lost in the process that should have been picked up on, and I feel that whatever they need to do to make this operation happen on July 1 shouldn't be reflected in any cost that you that the county sees. So
with Windstream's attitude, they'll get to it when they feel like it.
That's another way to put it.
Are they under the Public Service Commission?
Yes.
To take a letter from us to the Public Service Commission on such an attitude?
It may, but let's see how the afternoon meeting transpires.
How difficult is it to run a stupid line from wherever they run it? Take it back to Congress to do that almost? I hope not, because a year from now.
They are the phone company. So
I know they're a phone company, but they also underneath of a little layer of government, too.
I was wondering if they were leasing the property that they're on from the county. So, we'll see what the result of this meeting is this afternoon and adjust from there.
Gary?
Well, that's not the only thing that might hold up getting attorneys moved back in. We got to resolve the ceiling so they can finish. Is that correct?
Let's go with the motion on the floor, and then we can go elsewhere. Any more discussion on AmeriCom billing? Vote. 7-0. Gary, you're up.
Yeah. To get that elevator back in use, I was talking to Cheever's on-site man here. Do we have to get some of these issues with these ceilings and stuff resolved? So I know where to put the fire suppression system has to be operational in the whole building. Is that correct?
That is correct.
So how are we going to resolve this issue so that can be done so we can get the elevator and everything so we can get the attorneys back in?
They are hard at work. We have there's two elements involved in this, and one's the electrician who has to move some very large panels in the basement in order for the fire sprinkler installers to finish their work because they're right next to each other. The electricians are 90% on being able to eliminate those panels that are in the way. The fire sprinkler installer feels that he still has enough time to finish and get certified to meet our July 1.
But don't these ceilings on this floor have to be done?
They do not have to be installed. We just have to have the fire sprinklers
where they're going
to
be.
So they will turn on if there's a fire.
But you still got to determine the heights of the ceiling and things for sure to do that, right?
Those have all been determined.
Yeah. So they can put them in. That's been determined.
They can drop their lead down.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they can get everything activated without the installation of the ceiling.
Okay, Wim, while you're on the hot seat, our parabolic lights. Why did we go with parabolic lights when everyone I've talked to understand that they don't, it's down, but the lights aren't over where our operation centers are, our desk, we have dark areas. Why did we go with parabolic lights instead of other ones? Even Cheevers commented that they knew after the first room that these would not be what people wanted. Let me
interject into the conversation here. Ron Geary from Geary Engineering, who did all of the electrical layouts for the rooms.
All right. Well, you ask about the parabolic lights, and there's a whole realm of issues that we deal with as far as when we get into the design of the lighting systems. So bear with me a little bit. The federal government has passed a mandate that the states adopt energy codes. So Nebraska has adopted the 2003 International Energy Conservation Code as a code that we need to follow to design. Basically, that code puts an end to different lamp sources, such as your incandescent light lamps and also your old T12 fluorescent bulbs. You know, your T12 fluorescent bulbs are what are in your existing light fixtures. Now, this is the International Energy Conservation Code has been developed over several years to take advantage of new lighting technologies and decreased energy in office buildings, because most energy in office buildings is used in the lighting systems. Something like 60% of the energy that is used for light is used in commercial buildings is the lighting systems. So the manufacturers have developed, and they're continuing to develop, optics, light fixtures that take advantage of newer lamp sources. And so one of the products that are out in the market now is the parabolic light fixtures. Now, the parabolic light fixtures have and were originally designed for the office environment of where there are a lot of computer screens to reduce the glare on computer screens. So the technology is to push the light out of the fixture down onto the work plane and not to spread it out over the room. So as a result, you end up with a lighting level that should be higher on the floors or on the work surfaces where people are actually working, but there's going to be less light up on the wall.
Hey, I'm going
and
to interrupt
the
you there. Then how come the lights aren't over the work surfaces? And
well, I don't think they're supposed to be over the work surfaces.
Well,
now
you just said that they were designed to be.
Okay. On the light fixture, there is what we call a bat wing distribution, and the light is designed. It comes out in the shape of a bat wing, so that directly underneath the light fixture may not have as much light as out from the edge. Now there is about a 70 degree cutoff on the edge of the fluorescent light fixture down to the work surface. So then, if you have one light fixture and then another light fixture over here, you actually would have more light between the two fluorescent fixtures that are in the ceiling than actually below the light fixture. Now, I've got a light meter, and we can go through and we can look at that after the meeting here and go over that. Now, you know, we look at the manufacturer's recommended mounting height to spacing to mounting height ratio, and meet that requirement in what we're doing. So it should give you a very even lighting level in the workspace. Now, it's going to appear completely different than your existing lighting systems. The existing light systems, there's virtually no light control at the technology of when those light fixtures were built. It was just basically a bulb putting light into the space. Now, so we had chosen the parabolic light source for because of the CRT screen environment that you're in, and for energy efficiency. Now, as part of the International Energy Conservation Code, they have we have to look at the entire building, and they do an allowance for wattage for lights. And so we're allowed so many watts per square foot. It's something like 1.2 watts per square foot for lighting. And in order to meet that, we have to design the lighting to reach that level. Now, over the years, 30 years ago, we were designing office spaces for 60, 80 foot candles of lighting. We didn't pay a lot of attention to as much as we do now in energy. Well, now with the new standards, meeting the Energy Conservation Code, the lighting levels have actually dropped into the 40 to 60 foot candle range for an office. Now, back in the 50s and 60s And probably when these lights were put in, the standard was more 80 to 100 foot candles. So the trend in the lighting industry is less light, higher efficient lights, and but using a technology to get the light down where it's supposed to be and not bouncing around.
Does it make a difference on the distance from the fixture to the work surface with these new style lights or not?
Well, yeah, it does. And actually, if I talked about the 70 degree cutoff. So if we're adjacent to a wall, we're going to have a shadow down about equal to, if the light fixture is 6 feet away from the wall, you'll end up with a shadow that's 6 feet down the wall. So the higher up that is, gets above your visual, the better it should be, or better feel in the space. So a higher ceiling with those types of lights should actually feel better than a lower ceiling.
Feel better, be able to see better.
No, I'm talking more of about a psychological effect. Because when you walk into a room with a darker ceiling, it's going to feel darker and it's going to feel different than where the light is going all over is on the walls and onto the ceiling.
Are you suggesting that the ceiling heights that they're having in these offices are okay?
Yeah, I would think they are. I see no problem with that.
Matt? I now have a greater appreciation for the lighting science, but if they're still too dark, how do we improve that? If we still feel it's too dark, are those requirements, the wattage requirements, a basement or a ceiling? Is that as far as we can go? Can we put any more lights in there?
Well, we're given an allowance, and to meet the International Energy Conservation Code, we had worked through all those calculations during the design. So we always are underneath the allowable watts. I can't give an answer today where we're at as far as allowable, where we designed to and the allowable watts. So there would be a cushion there, but I don't know how much that is.
Can you simply put in larger bulbs or take more fixtures? Or if the people aren't happy, I know there's a deal where you just got to get used to a change, and a change drives everybody up the wall. But if it's too dark, what are our options?
You probably have to put in more light fixtures if it is just too dark. I would, and there may be a few areas where it is too dark, but I'm going to challenge that, because I trust our calculations that we've done as far as meeting the lighting standards. Now, because I will say that our design meets lighting standards. Now, the argument is, well, okay, are the lighting standards tolerable? Is it acceptable to your staff? You know, and that's kind of, a judgment call. Then you walk into a space, well, it's too dark. Lighting standards are somewhat flexible, because they go into, I mean, if you study it, it goes into the size of the print. It goes into the age of the person, meaning that as you get older, you can't see as well. Not that that's age discrimination, but I know I can't see as well as I used to. If you're looking at a very detailed map with smudged writing over the years, if you're looking at some legal document that's a photocopy of a photocopy of a photocopy, then yeah, maybe in some of those areas we will need to add some lights. But
would the best advice be let them use it for 3 months and then see where it needs boosted or changed, or is it easier, better now, or what? This probably ain't your first rodeo. How have other office staffs reacted to your installation?
It's definitely a change and probably a shock, and It's just like your heating system is going to be this winter. You know, people are used to the warm radiators over in the corner. Well, they're not going to have that anymore. It's going to be air circulation. So it's a whole different feel. Same way with your light fixtures. It's a whole different feel when you get into the room. But I would guess that glare will be greatly reduced. Eye fatigue will be lessened. And after a period of time, that the staff will get used to the lights and actually appreciate them. So, yes, I would say...
I disagree with you, sir, because they just changed my lights in my office. I have more of a glare on my computer now than I had before.
Okay. I would like to take a look at that with you to see where the glare is coming from.
Would that be from the lights or would it be from the windows?
Well...
I'm going to have the windows there regardless. So
well, I know, but you got.
All I know is I want your card for four offices. They can call you.
I say, hope you got the rest of your day blocked off for us.
I think Dave would like to make some comments.
You do have a concern with the windows, and we are, you know, they're part of the project is to open the windows up, and there's new windows going in, and I don't know if...
Well, to clarify on the windows, I haven't had blinds on there since they started this, and I had lights, my old lights, until 2 days ago. I've been watching that same computer all that time with the lights behind me on the window. So
okay.
It has definitely changed since they put the new lights in.
Okay. Some of your glare issues may be easier to handle with a new CRT screen rather than they make the anti-glare.
I have a new computer screen as a year ago, and I have a screen cover over it.
Okay. All right.
Well, so in other words, like it's everyone else's fault but yours.
Pardon?
That's what I'm hearing. It's everybody else's fault but yours.
Well, no, I haven't said that. I mean, if there's...
You've been making excuse after excuse as this has come forward.
Pardon?
You've been making excuse after excuse.
I've tried to explain where we're at. Now, if there's dark areas, we'll address those dark areas. If there's glare...
We're hearing complaints from offices all the way through the courthouse. It's not one office. It's not one individual. It's staff are the people that work for us and are here day after day, and they're very, very concerned. And I'd like to hear Mr. Jones's comment.
Okay.
I would just like to say, since the lights have been changed, it is a very good, clean light. I was here in the evening, and you could tell a world of difference between the newer light and the older. But the main problem is it just seems like there's not nearly enough light to go around. Where just like looking at Mr. Adams here, you can see the shadows on his face and his shirt. That's what we're seeing in all the offices now also. There's a lot of dark corners, and I don't think you can get used to it. And where you're saying it's more of a psychological difference, it seems very gloomy and very non-office-like in the offices right now. So I've had a lot of discussions with Don, and I thought, well, it's a nice clean light, and maybe it is something you need to get used to. But after looking at all the different offices, it appears like half the lights are not on. So.
Won't make any difference whether you have the ceilings in or no ceiling, does it?
It makes a big difference,
was
yes.
Because right now most of the offices don't have their ceilings in there. That would have something on reflection or something on the amount of light you're getting because there's no, like, in your office, you don't.
Yeah, but he told us, the engineer stuff, or the guy that was in there, he said there's not a reflection. It shouldn't make any difference. The light doesn't
go. Well, no, but I'm just saying, would it seem like you'd have more light if the ceilings were in? I mean, psychologically, again, that goes back to...
Harry?
Being up on the third floor, and they got a lot lower ceilings there, and when all the lights are on, maybe it's because some of the rooms are smaller and the light-colored walls and that, but I thought that didn't look too bad on the third floor.
It looks good on the third floor, yeah.
But then you got a lower ceiling and lightly-colored painted walls. So I don't know if none of that matters. I'm not an engineer. Don't want to be, but it does...
The answer we want to hear is you are working on it, correct?
Yes, that's why I'm here today, to look into it.
Okay.
And see what can be done. And I, you know, I welcome all comments, because the more information we can get to understand the concerns, the better off we are. And I guess, you know, I'll be asking questions too. You say third floor.
Third floor looks nice.
Looks nice.
Yes, it does.
But that's no offices are in there, though.
No, it's mainly.
Yeah, but the district court, or is it that one room? That,
yeah,
you know,
Diane Wells.
Room.
I'm talking about the county attorney's new space.
Yeah. Well, and Diane Wells is upstairs on third also, and
she
does like her lights.
She has no complaints or anything on it.
It's just on first floor. There's
in fact,
so many
she didn't
shadows.
Think the lights are on.
It's on this level,
because
mostly on this level.
Here,
and all areas.
Is room two down?
Well, she will probably be in good shape because she has very low ceilings.
Okay.
There, so I think.
So yeah, mostly here. Then I'm assuming.
It seems like during this time of improvements and everything, the lighting, I thought that we would have a nice even light throughout the offices, and that just isn't happening.
Well, it needs to be, the issue needs to be settled one way or the other.
Yeah.
I'm not a lighting engineer. That's what we hired the lighting engineer for.
Okay, well, I'll be here as long as I need to today.
You want to set up appointments for him on what offices want to talk to him?
Well, I would hope many of us, if possible, when meeting gets over, he has some time to go with him with this light meter and see what the problems are or where they're at.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. We can only have four at that meeting.
Senator, were you here for anything or were you just here today?
Just here.
I thought that's what you were, but I thought maybe I should ask. Okay, committee reports.
Oh, let's see.
Yeah. Mine's quick. I went to Five Rivers thing that Shirley likes to go to, and there are a lot of nice people, and the treats were excellent.
Troll for a fat guy, you're going to catch one.
Nice people.
Okay, Ron.
We had some discussion on there's going to have to be some minor asbestos removals done because of what be doing in some of the different offices. One of them's a district clerk and district courtroom. There's some asbestos in the floor material, and when they go to putting in, what is it, some boxes?
Electrical? Four power.
They're going to have to cut out some of that little asbestos and dispose of it. These are all minor stuff, but they're asbestos. And there's also some in, there's a few boards in the assessor's office that has some asbestos on them. The county board has some asbestos on the window panels.
This is adjacent.
Okay, not here, but in the one in there.
Correct.
And
the reason that those weren't moved is at the time we removed all the rest of them is because we had a lot of electrical and data systems that were routing through this.
So we've got about four office registered deeds has some asbestos in the southwest corner and also in the restroom down there. The urgency I guess we have is probably in the district courtroom and the clerk's office. District clerk's office, I think, is where the biggest urgency is at. And we've asked Wim to check with some asbestos contractors, maybe in Lincoln or whatever, to see what would be the most cost-effective outfit to use on this instead of having maybe somebody from Lincoln come all the way down here to do that minor job. So that's something he'll be working on with us in the next two or three meetings. Also, if you go into the county courtroom, look up on the west side between the windows up there. When they were doing some work with the sheetrock
refinishing.
There's the bricks up there that are just hanging that are going to have to be removed and then put back with new brick and mortar. Dave's going to be just contacting a local brick contractor on that to do that work and hopefully get somebody in there while they're still doing the work with the scaffolding. So you're up there about 25-30 feet. Mark Mites is working on the generator needs, both for our new electrical system here in the county courthouse, and also the generator needs over there, that maybe we'll take this generator
here and take it over to the counties, it's better, I mean, to the sheriff's office, and look for a new or a good used one for this down here to take care of this three-phase. We got a three-phase operation instead of a two-phase. I guess that's about the main things. We missed you guys at the meeting. Sorry you couldn't be there.
Oh, my.
Only lasted a couple hours, so. But you'll be at the next one. I think that's all, unless, Wim, you have anything you wanna add. Schottler's contract to start doing work didn't get here till after the agenda was set, so I have to leave that go for 2 weeks. That's so I'll get a hold of them, but.
Yeah, no, I don't have any other items at
this point. That's
okay. My report. Any other committee reports? Anything else for the good of the order? Gage County Board of Supervisors adjourned 11:20.